Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, I'm Jamie Winstone, and this is my greatest night ever.
We've had some goodies.
And I got into the pool first,
because it was a mega party.
We've got my beautiful Princess Julia here.
This is the corner of our little mind, isn't it, Julia?
We have bougie bitches out here.
That's so like inspiring. A miracle.
It's a miracle.
It's so amazing.
Might be raving to that garage tune in the kitchen.
Yeah, definitely.
Greatest night ever, delivered by Zap.
Hi, Jamie.
Hello, my darling Princess Julia. I'm ecstatic today, actually, because I've got someone who I'm a huge fan of, who I think is super talented and just the most gorgeous man. I've worked with him before. He directed me in a film called Love, Paul, a short, which was just fantastic. We've got the amazing Asim Chowdhury in today.
Really?
Yeah, he is just fantastic. I cannot wait for you to meet him. Have you actually met him before?
I've never met him, but I'm super excited about meeting Asim, must say.
He is so brilliant. Obviously, he's got things under his belt, like People Just Do Nothing. He's a comedy genius. Japadichi, in his own right, is Hounslow's favourite character. But I'm just super intrigued because not a lot of people see this side of him, and which I know because I've had the pleasure of working with him, the side that he is super intelligent and he's super feet on the ground, humble as you like, and an amazing, amazing person just to chat to. So I'm buzzing about him coming in today.
Well, I'm intrigued now.
Yeah.
Greatest night ever.
Greatest night never. I mean, greatest night never. Wrong podcast. Greatest night ever with Asim Chowdhury. I mean, how lucky are we, babes?
We are so lucky.
We are so lucky. I mean, he's an amazing... The thing is about Asim that I love is that he's actually gone majorly Hollywood. He's huge and he's so intelligent and whenever you get in the room with him, he's very good at playing it down and keeping it humble. But we can definitely fluff him today because I'm a huge fan and I'm so excited for you to hear about his greatest night ever.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, should we bring him in?
Yeah,
Let's get him in. Hello, Asim.
Asim.
Come on in.
Let me talk to you about our wonderful sponsor, Zap, the convenience delivery app which delivers drinks, snacks, essential groceries, over-the-counter medicines and much, much more in minutes 24/7. It is my absolute go-to whenever I'm in London. Mid-party, when you've run out of chilled champagne or tequila, or just simply want snacks and ice cream for your spontaneous movie night with the kids, Zap has you covered. So whether you're having the greatest night ever or a quiet night in, download Zap today to try for yourself.
Welcome. I'm super, super excited to have our very, very special guest today, Asim Chowdhury. Thank you so much
for
coming.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. This set is amazing.
Thank you so much. This is the corner of our little mind, isn't it, Julia?
It is, yeah.
This is our boudoir, and we're very honoured to have you in here.
It's like a fever dream. I like it.
Yeah, so it's quite trippy.
It's like a panic attack, but a nice one. You know what I mean?
A nice
bad trip.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, we love a bad trip sometimes.
Yeah.
No, they start bad and they always end nicely.
It's always
when you're finally coming out of
it. As long as you get to the destination. As you get to the light at the end of the tunnel, then. Don't think about the process.
Like that. I'm coming up. Oh, and it's all fine.
I actually remember one Glastonbury when I saw you and we went down the rabbit hole. And I remember there was this geezer right in front of me, you know, when you have to crawl and get, you know, where the nuns were, they're like whipping you. It's mad.
Getting spanked.
And I was like, some geezer was right, his arsehole right in my face in front of me. And as we got out the other end, I was like, oh shit, it's David Beckham. I was like, right up in Bex's arsehole.
That
was right the near year. The Golden Balls. That was, do you remember that year?
That year was mental. That year was when actually Brad Pitt was in the rabbit hole as well.
Really?
Yes. And I was like, oh God, great. Chatting to some lovely guy. Yeah.
What's the rabbit hole?
The rabbit hole is this spot at Glastonbury where you crawl through and you basically revealed into this the rave. Yeah. And you kind of lose days in there. You can lose days in there. I mean, it's very appropriate actually talking about it because it was one of our greatest night ever. And I remember I was talking to this bloke going, oh God, he's a lovely looking bloke. But yeah, I mean, his face is a bit distorted. He does look a bit like Brad Pitt.
No.
He does look like Brad Pitt, and turns out it was fucking Brad Pitt. So, yes, it turns out Brad Pitt is fit.
Do you think Brad Pitt uses that? Like, you know, it's a common saying going, well, I'm no Brad Pitt.
We go quite way back, as you've just said. We met each other at Glastonbury. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's where we met. I think we would have met a few times, maybe at NME Award or something that.
NME, definitely.
With your beautiful fiancé.
Yeah, yeah.
The cutest. I remember just falling in love with you both, going, oh, my God, they're just so cute and they're so in love. It's so good.
Thank you.
So congratulations on your engagement.
Thank you very much. And you, congratulations.
Thank you,
at
my
Glastonbury
love.
As well, you were telling me. Amazing.
But you've never met, right?
We've never met. No, I've just... viewed you from afar.
Oh, wow.
And you're quite a fan, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I am now. Oh. Even more.
Well, you've been watching the... Because I watched the trailer of Sandman and it looks banging. Yeah. Looks amazing, actually.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. No, it's it's pretty mental to be part of something that's like 30 years old, like in terms of the comic books. And I mean, playing Abel from Cain and Abel...
Sick.
Legendary characters, but also biblical characters. You know, they're in the Torah, they're in the Quran, and it was, and also playing alongside Sanjeev Bhaskar, who for me growing up as an Asian kid in England, goodness gracious me, for me was like the holy grail, like just seeing someone who looks like you and they were allowed to be themselves and be funny. And like before that, we'd have like, you know, the odd shopkeeper in EastEnders, and you'd be like, him, he looks like me, but it was like he had two lines, you know, thank you, come again, maybe.
We met, also, we got the honour to work with each other on an amazing short film that you directed called Love Pool, which was so bloody fun to work with you.
Well, thank you for doing, because that was amazing.
No, it was great. It was just such a great experience. And my love for you just grew and grew.
Oh, thank
you. It really did. And you're just such an, like, talented actor, a director. You just have so many strings to your bow, and it's an honour to have you here.
Thank you very much.
But more excitingly, why we are here and why we have you in our boudoir, Asim, what is your greatest night ever?
It's such a great question, and I really had to think about it because I could have gone for like the most wildest nights, the drunkest nights, the just those nights that sometimes were kind of blurry and you forget them. They were so good. No pictures taken.
Yeah.
I always say that the best nights have no pictures.
Yeah.
Because
no,
you're too busy having, you're just too busy having fun. But I actually went for something that as I've gotten older, and obviously People Just Do Nothing, it started off on YouTube, a bunch of mates.
God.
I got my camera fresh out of uni, couldn't get any work. I was broke, hustling, like doing £100 music videos, hood videos, like in car parks, just shit, doing weddings for 200 quid, like just hustling, right?
The hustle was real.
The hustle was real. And then one of those little things that we filmed was People Just Nothing, a little sketch that we put up on YouTube. It took off on BBC. And then after that, it was, you know, forward 10 years, 5 seasons, a few, you know, some BAFTAs, a movie.
Just a couple of BAFTAs.
Just a couple of BAFTAs. And, you know, a movie in Japan. And then for me, when I think about the greatest night ever, I actually think about the premiere of the film when it came out. And we were in the Odeon, and it was, you know, just after COVID. So, you know, it was finally, we did the movie right before COVID hit in Japan, got home, COVID happened, lockdown, had to wait a year and a half for the movie to be released. And the reason why I think it's one of the greatest nights ever for me, it's this feeling of this journey that we've done together as friends. You know, we started something from nothing, this huge journey, and just the people that were there. You know, my parents are divorced. I think I was maybe 11 or 12. And it's always tough, you know, when you're a kid, you know, you kind of want your parents to stay together. And, you know, my dad was a bit of a geezer, a bit dodgy, you know, around Hounslow, a bit of a Del boy. And, you know, my mom was like this, you know, beautiful woman. And she was like, you know, she was like the gangster's wife with the fur coat. So our childhood was very rocky. You know, one day we would have a brand new big TV, and the next day we'd have loan sharks knocking at the door. So, you know, there was no consistency. And I remember they used to fight so much, my parents.
I hear you on that.
They used to fight all the time, right? And I one of my earliest memories was going out into the garden and getting a twig, right, and wrapping a white plastic Tesco bag on it and going into the bedroom and waving it around like a peace flag and just being like, stop,
oh, stop. My God.
So we really, you know, like, so them breaking up was actually the best thing that could ever happen because after that, I had a better relationship with both of them individually. And throughout the years, you know, they don't talk much, but they're still our parents, so they still have to. And that night on the premiere, you know, they were both there and they both there with their children, their other, you know, my mum's been remarried to another man. My dad's remarried. He's got three kids, three sons. My mum's got another daughter who are super young as well, 14, like really cute. And they were all there. Some of my other family members who've been like beefing for years.
You know, you can't beef now.
So it was just like this togetherness of like finally being like, look, no matter what our problems are, we're all here to celebrate like me and my journey and this, you know, this struggle that we've all gone through together. And you know, when you get your wins, your family are part of it as well, because you've had to sacrifice your time with them. I would have loved to have been there more for them, but you know what it's like when you have to hustle and you have that pressure on you from everyone. Looks at you like you're the person that we're kind of relying on. And it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, the pressure is real. And also spending a lot of time in this industry, you have to go away a lot of time. I know I've certainly left Raymond a couple of months on end and it's heartbreaking. But, you know, to share that moment with them at the end result, you know, even if they don't like the movie. I mean, it would be nice to do something that my son can actually watch one day.
Yeah.
But definitely not watching Kid Adulthood. Never. But, you know, it's that journey of them seeing, and I certainly had it with my dad growing up and going, wow, you know, like I realised why he was away and putting dinner on the table. And, you know, that thing that you said about, you know, waving the flag. For me, like, it was always making a game of hiding from the taxman. Because, you know, if you didn't hide from the taxman, did you really grow up on a council estate in London?
Right.
Like, no, you did not. I'm sorry. But so, you know, it's so beautiful to hear that this is actually your greatest night ever, to know that you had your family and your friends watching something that you've worked so hard on and achieved something so massive. Mm-hmm. So where was this? So this was at the Odeon.
It was at the Odeon, I think, Leicester Square.
Woo! Jeez! Yeah.
And it was... but it was quite a closed event. It wasn't open to the public. Yeah. It was just... But it was so much of our family and friends. Mm. And it was just like... First, I was like... You know, in that old Seinfeld thing, worlds colliding. Keep your different friends groups separate. Because you're like... Then you start getting anxious. Like, oh, my God, he's going to hate him and she's going to hate her all this stuff. But it was the most wonderful night. And it was literally like... My parents there talking to each other. My stepmom was there, you know, talking to my... And it was just like all my best friends from Hounslow, the boys I grew up with, and my uni mates, and obviously...
So that's what I was going to ask.
All the different groups together.
And actually just appreciating what you've done.
Yeah.
Because, like, you did put a certain scene on the map there single-handedly. Like, your journey with Chapati G and Corrupt FM, just I've never seen anything like it. Have you seen much of it, Julia?
I've seen bits of it.
It's so incredible to put something like that, that's so sort of precious to our upbringing, like pirate radio station and that scene of music, and just even the title, People Just Do Nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and actually, like, People Just Do Nothing in that, but it was just so something to us growing up.
Yeah. I mean, the title's quite ironic because it's like, when you look at it, it's like People Just Do Nothing. If you watch the episodes, there's always some mad shit going on. Like, your buddy's running around trying to get egg boxes, trying to soundproof the studio. Steve's just trying to do this. There's a lot of shit going on, but if you look at it, like, there's nothing happening.
No.
They're doing fucking nothing, right? They're these bums sitting in a pirate radio station, just like...
Running
scum. MCing, just bunning zoots. And they've got fuck all to do with their lives. But the thing is, to them... Every day is crazy and they are content in their little world. And that's what it was like growing up. You know, when you're in your little bubble, you don't give a shit about the outside world.
No.
You don't care about celebrity and status. You are your own celebrities within that little ecosystem that you created.
So true.
And it was a subculture, you know. It was, you know, Rude Boys, Chavs, Freshies, you know, all this stuff. They were all together, though. We all coexisted together.
And the genius of that in the film... I mean, obviously, this is about the greatest night ever and that how that was for you. But also the genius of the parallels in, you know, having this night, you know, sharing what you've worked on with all the other, with the boys, and the rest of the cast of Big in Japan. Mm-hmm. The parallels of, I can't imagine how that must have felt for you, sitting there watching it with all your boys who you grew up with, all the cast that you'd worked amazingly with, and your family and your friends and your mum and dad, especially them being separated and having them in the same room watching what you've worked on.
Yeah.
But also seeing on screen this journey portrayed, because it's sad. When I watched it, you know, it was kind of like, oh, I'm not ready to say goodbye. Not ready to say goodbye to these characters at all. Mm-hmm. There's something really powerful and clever that you do, that you wrap it up and you kind of like expose Chapelji's like worst traits and then kind of bring him back to be this hero.
Yeah.
Because it's beautiful and it kind of like you get choked up at the end.
Yeah.
Get really choked up. How did you feel watching that, like knowing what you've been through on this journey?
It was definitely emotional. I think, you know, the journey of working with your mates, and it's not easy working with your mates. You know, they're your mates for a reason, because
I don't know how you keep a straight face after. So.
Yeah. No, it is hard as well, because our thing on set is to crack each other up. So it's not, I don't really care about the whole cast and crew, but I'm trying to make Steve's crack up.
Was there any tears on the night? Because obviously, like, there's watching it and that those nerves, and I can't imagine the atmosphere in the room.
Yeah, it was definitely emotional.
Yeah.
There was definitely a few tears shed that night. And it was also just the madness of the night, because there was so much going on. There were so many different people. Like, I was overwhelmed. I was like, shit, it's my uncle, shit, it's my auntie, it's my mum, it's my dad, it's my sister, it's my brother, it's my best friend, it's this and that. And it was quite funny, actually, because my mum and dad were going around being like, we always knew he'd be a star. which was bullshit. They were like, literally like, get a job, you bum. What are you doing with that camera? They did not get it. And like, even when I wanted to do media studies, they were like, oh, he just wants to DOS. He doesn't want to do like a proper thing. Because back then as well, you know, if you're telling them to do media stuff, they're like, what the fuck, watching TV?
Yeah, that's not.
Yeah, get a job. Get a proper job. So they were, you know, they definitely weren't fans in the beginning. But over the years, they became, you know, a bit more. And they were obviously trying to take credit for it. We always knew. You know, we did it again.
I
actually remember my fiance was with them, and they were both like kind of patting each other on the back saying, we did a really good job with them, didn't we? I was like, oh, full of shit.
You know? They did do a really good job.
They did. But I mean, you know. But a lot of it was, I think, because I got left alone to my own devices. So I didn't have that pressure in school. I left school with like, you know, two GCSEs. I've had so much fun in school. I just used to smoke weed. My thing in school was going to school, flirt with the girls, smoke weed, bunk. I just didn't take it seriously at all, because I was an academic and I'm still not. I was a creative kid.
I kind of feel the same.
Do you know what I mean? So
the same.
instead of like, you know, doing all that stuff, even though I was a bit of a shit, I was still going home and making little music videos and making songs and all that. I was still creative, but they saw it as, oh, he's fucking around. But like nowadays, I think you'd look at a kid, if someone is doing that, it's like, you know, we had a whole album by year seven.
My thing is like you, yeah, do the thing that you really love doing and see where it takes you, because I am a great believer of putting that, you know, energy in.
Yeah.
I'm going back to it.
Oh, she's getting her crystal ball out.
Get the crystals out.
She's actually Mystic Meg on Tuesday.
No, I'm not.
You are a fashion icon, I hope you know.
Well, me not. I mean, Chobody is.
Yeah, Chobody is.
Not me. I have to be quiet.
You always cut a very stylish look when I see you out.
I mean,
babe.
I mean,
on the red carpets, darling.
Yeah, I mean, I have to play it down a little bit because Chobody's so mental.
Yeah, no.
He's just always wearing like leopard skin.
No, he is legendary fashion status. But what did you wear to the premiere? What did you wear to your screening?
Oh God, you know what?
Was it a nice relaxed suit?
No, it wasn't actually. It was a kind of a turtleneck and a blazer situation. When you're a bit of a girthier guy, sometimes shirt's not always the best option. A nice kind
nice
of turtleneck jumper.
Gorge.
Hides a bit of the love handles, you know, and you just feel a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah.
I've definitely had those days when you get a few button poppings.
Yeah.
You sit down, you kind of like, you take someone's fucking eye out. Like, you know what I mean? So a nice jumper can just tuck all that away.
Tuck it all away.
Yeah.
Feeling suave.
Yeah, exactly.
So after the screening, did you have a party?
And it was quite funny actually, because we were kind of there and just chatting and everything. But I was kind of waiting for some of my family to go because then we could get really kind
go
of like
in hard.
Yeah, we could go really go in hard, and the kids as well, because it was you know, my little sister was there. Yeah. My little sister's 14 and my little brothers are 14, 16 and 19.
Oh my God, you're like the best older brother ever.
I mean, it's amazing actually having them around, because they're from the same area. Obviously we have, you know, same mums and same dads kind of thing. A lot of the stuff they're going through, I've been through. And sometimes because their parents are older, even though when my parents had me, they were young parents. My mum had me and my sister both by the age of 20, 19.
Right, okay. That's
you know,
young.
Council estate girl in Ealing, you know, it was like a really... Yeah. And then, you know, I look back and I think like a lot of the things my parents did, they got wrong, right? Fair enough. You put your hands up. They got stuff right, but they got a lot of stuff wrong. But I look back and I think, fucking hell, they were kids.
Yeah,
like they were
20.
Imagine
mom.
Being 20 and having two kids and a mortgage. Like, I was literally a fucking idiot when I was 20.
Yeah, no, it's terrifying.
I was just smoking weed and just wanking.
No, completely. Like, that was my life.
I had no fucking clue what
winging
I was doing.
Winging it at life.
Like, no idea what I was doing. So,
now you're so
you go
right.
back, and now it's almost like they've got a second shot because now they're kind of older and they've got these kids. And it's kind of sweet and sad at the same time because you see them doing stuff with their kids now, which they kind of should have done with me and my sister.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
we're also playing those paternal roles for our little brothers and sisters.
100%.
So seeing them that night was amazing as well because they look up at me and they and I, like I was talking about Sanji from Sandman, right? And, you know, other amazing South Asian role models we have as well, you know, Riz Ahmed and people like this. And you look at them and you're like, man, like, if they can do it, we can do it.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to be it, you have to see it, right?
100%.
So they're right there with me every day, and I'm trying to influence them, and it's hard for these generation of
to
kids.
See because, that.
Because of lockdown as well, I do feel for them. Like, they lost 2 years.
Of their important rave years.
Those years. Imagine we lost
them.
Oh,
no. No,
I mean, being 15, 16, I was actually going to, you know, pick one of another option for my greatest night ever was my 15th birthday party in Hounslow in a pub, which was a proper rave, and it got gay, and I shared it with these two girls who I used to fancy as well. I fancied both of them.
Living the dream, and boss life.
And one of the girls had the same birthday as me, so it was like that was another great night for me. But I couldn't imagine not having those years.
Yeah. No, we're lucky, and I feel for my little sister. She lost sort of that last 2 years. She's only just turned 21. Same sort of age gap between me and my little sister. Mm-hmm. And they've had a completely different upbringing to us, you know, in terms of social media and everything, the exposure they get or need and or feel like they want. Mm.
Even just doing some stupid shit for when you were like, I remember when I was 15 as well, we did all-nighters in Hounslow Heath. And we would stay out all night in the woods and light fires and drink and smoke weed. And then we'd jump on the night bus and go to Heathrow. And then because it was freezing, so we'll go to Heathrow and just sit in Heathrow for a bit. Like, but yeah.
I want to be in your gang.
Yeah, no, so that we used to build stuff as well in the heat, because, you know, I'm from Hounslow and my school was Heathlands, and it was called Heathlands because there was a massive heath behind the school, like a huge, and we used to bunk as well because you would just run into the heath and no one will know where you are. But I remember one summer, you know, one of them just stupid long summers that feel like a year, you know, when you're younger and the summers feel like
amazing. End up forever. On a golf course.
And and they're amazing. And I remember we, you know, when people dump their sofas on the, you know, just on the street, we started collecting all these sofas on the streets and taking them back to Heath. And we created a den.
Oh my God, the Lost Boys.
Yeah, the Lost Boys. And I remember we found an old Christmas tree. And we put up a Christmas tree right in the middle of it. And for decorations, we put like condoms and druggy bags. Like, what do you call them? Like, on the Christmas.
Bubbles.
Yeah, baubles. It was
sounds
like
the Jean-Paul Gaultier Christmas tree now.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that idea of invention.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're continually, like your imagination just seems continually
expanding
and like making the most of every situation?
I think that's a great question because I think that's one thing that you never run out of is creativity.
Yeah.
You know, someone's like, oh, like, let's just say someone nicks your idea. It happens, right? Especially in comedy. You know,
damn,
it's happened to me quite a long time, a lot of times. But it's not like, oh, that's it now. I haven't got any more ideas. I think the more you use your creative brain, I think the more creative you become.
Yeah.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So you had a bit of a party after your greatest night ever.
Yes.
How did you wrap it up? And when you laid in your bed that night, like, how was you feeling?
You know what? When I got back home, I was with my fiance and we were lying down. And I think I said to her, that might be the greatest day of my life. The greatest night of my life. Because it wasn't the most drunk. It wasn't the most fun. It wasn't the most wild.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of wild nights.
Yeah, you really have.
Crazy fucking nights. Like, and I love that I've lived.
Yeah.
I love that I've lived. You know, I love that we've all lived. I love we can have those nights where it's so blurry and so fucked up you can't even remember what happened, right? I love those nights. But what do they actually mean? I'm not saying they're meaningless, but this felt like a real moment of clarity for me. And it felt like a moment where I could say, okay, you know, I think goodbyes and endings are the hardest things in the world. Like, I'm terrible. Like, even I was just in Norway for 7 weeks doing this film. And, you know, obviously you're with someone for 7 weeks. You know what it's like, Jamie. You create a family, right? And it's hard for us. You know, when you're working with this group, you create, and there was children as well on set. And it was like, you know, they become like, they reminded me of my brothers and my sisters. Aww. I became so protective and lovely with them. And at the end, you have to say goodbye and you're gone.
And that's it.
And that's it. And you move on to another family. And it's really heartbreaking. So sometimes it's good to have that closure, that clarity and that feeling of exhaling. Like, that's what I felt like it was. It was like this whole moment I was taking all of this stuff in, and then there was a moment of clarity where I was like, okay, there's closure here. My mum and my dad are like proud of me and they're happy and they're not fighting and I don't have to get the fucking flag out. And you know, it was almost a role reversal, because I do think that, you know, your parents look after you, but there is a clear changing of the guard. I actually remember there was this moment at my little sister's birthday, and I had all my family around. Again, my mum and dad came again. So again, that it opened up my family as well. Because since then, we've all met again together.
Wow.
And this has not happened for 10, 15 years maybe. But now, like, so this was a few months ago. It was my little sister's birthday. And we put on this. My fiance did so much work. And it was our new house. All my family came. And this was a really sad moment for me. Because I love my camera stuff. Because, you know, I study film. So I've got cameras and I'm a bit of a deckhead, as everybody would say. I love my deck. So I had my video camera and I was going around and filming everyone, right? And filming everyone and doing this and that. And then I remember, like, just seeing my dad. And my dad looked a bit, not off, but a bit sad. And then I was kind of, like, analysing it later. And I realised that that's what my dad used to do in the family events. That was his role. The guy, do you remember your dad would go around with a big video camera? Hello! Say hello to the camera! Filming. But now it was the changing of the guard. It was my house. It was my camera. It was the handover. And he was proud, but I could see there was this sense of, I'm not the man anymore. Chobani's kind of based on my dad, right?
Yeah.
And I remember we were walking, when I was a kid, I'm sure you could relate to this as well with your old man. So, like, my dad was a bit of a hood celebrity, right? A bit of, you know, a geezer around the manor. Everyone knew him. He had, like, an Indian restaurant, a minicab office, and an internet cafe all on the same parade.
Yes. So wow. Like, well done.
Yeah, little Tony, Tony Soprano of Hounslow, right? And I remember when I was a kid, we used to walk down the Hounslow High Street, and it would take us fucking hours because every other step, someone would come up to him. Oh, Chaudhary Saab, shake his hand. They would chat for 10, walking down the other street. Oh, because he was just such a don. Everyone knew him. He used to help everyone, right? Mm. And then I remember, like, a couple of years ago, we were walking down the Hounslow High Street and fans were coming up to me. Chobani, can I get a pitch? Can I get a self? And my dad said, he goes, bloody hell, nobody knows me anymore, man. but it wasn't sad, but he goes up to people and goes, because he's super cringe.
And now it's like, oh, I'm Paddy T's dad.
He does. My dad's one of the sweetest, most charming guys in the world. He will go up to someone, like, if we were in this restaurant right now, he'll just go up to a table and he goes, hey, you know my son? And they'll be like, it's Chobani G. He'll start Googling me and showing people.
That's amazing.
That's being proud.
Yeah.
It's important that as well, you know, the proudness. And it's kind of like really rocks me, this, actually. Thank you so much.
But that's why I picked this as my greatest night ever, because it meant so much for me in terms of family and in terms of, you know, even just that power switch, that role reversal, the pressure of being this person that you've become. Mm. And it's almost like the it's almost like you don't want it. Right. Like, this is going to sound super cheesy, but like, you know, I was watching. Have you seen June? You know, June?
Yes.
Right. You know, that epic, you know, film with Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah.
And there was this great quote in it. This is going to make me sound like such a wanker.
Oh, come on.
But it was something like great leaders don't want to lead. They answer the call to lead. So like me, I don't want to fucking lead anything. I don't want to be the guy who's everyone's relying on. Mm. But sometimes you just have to answer the call to lead.
Listen.
And the great leaders are like that. Yeah. They're not going, I want to be number one, I want to be the leader. They just, everyone looks at them and goes, what should we do?
What are you manifesting right now, Asim?
Okay, well, this was a great question, you know, and I've been thinking about it a lot, actually. Because I've been away for so long, you know, in 7 weeks in Norway, it's actually made me kind of put things into perspective. I mean, one thing I would say about when you go away for quite a while, I'm sure you guys can relate, you kind of look back into your life that's happening like on Instagram or whatever, and you're kind of going like, this is what it would be like if I died. Like, everyone's just fucking getting on with their lives.
Everybody's fun about their funeral, guys. Everybody's done it. Nobody talks about it.
But in a more serious way, like, everyone's fine. And I know that sounds quite morbid, but one of my fears is always like, if anything happens to me, what's going to happen to my people? What's going to happen to my mum, my dad, my fiance, my little sister, my little brothers? Like, are they going to be okay? And I know it sounds weird, but like, being away for that long and looking into that, I'm like, they're going to be fucking fine. Mm. They miss you, that's fine, but they will be okay.
Yeah.
So like, there was this wanting to be needed, right? Or needing to be needed. Mm. Which I think is not healthy, because I think it's like almost quite controlling.
You've got to go and
it's almost like, I need you to need me, you know? Mm. Oh, no, you can't cope without me. It's like, no, actually, shut the fuck up. Mm. They can cope. They're fine. They're strong. Mm. You know, stronger than you think they are. So I think for what I'm manifesting is that it's just to kind of let go a little bit more and feel a bit more secure in myself and in other people. And the ability of other people being okay and not always having to feel like I have to be there for everyone all the time, 24/7.
Princess Julia, what are you manifesting right now?
Well, after listening to you and all the wonderful stories you have and your experiences, I am manifesting the art of being grounded.
Very good.
And I've really taken that away with me from the things that you've talked about.
Yeah.
Your family, your chosen family is really, really important. I'm choking up now because honestly, it's very sort of emotional.
Yeah.
And it was just the thought
really
of you at your premiere with all those people around you that are so important to you really sort of touched me.
Oh, thank you.
I just, I'm so grateful, just to wrap up on what I am manifesting right now.
Yeah.
I am manifesting to keep on this lovely, amazing, amazing,
amazing. So it's Sean Connery then, amazing.
But it is, it's the grounding, it's connecting with family, but it's also to sort of, I'm manifesting our new energy and to move into this new world that I think we're entering into. Yeah, we're going to go and have a proper, like, love off cry over you now, basically. I love you so much. Thank you. And she's simply following you home.
Can you adopt me? I could be some, like, weird aunt that's just come along.
Yeah, you could live with me and Cain and Abel in the House of Mystery. Yeah.
I love you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jamie. Thank you.
Epic.
Guys.
Jamie Winstone's Greatest Night Ever has been delivered to you by Zap, the on-demand convenience delivery app. My co-host and iconic sister-in-arms is Princess Julia. The series was created and produced by my partner in crime, Mr. Rupert Fowler. Our original artwork is by cartoon extraordinaire Jamie Hewlett. And our theme music is by the cosmically major Remy Mazette. This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network. I'm Jamie Winstone, and this has been my greatest night ever.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.